You and I sitting down back together again midweek Wednesday style, January 17th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. We talked about the continued appeal for election monitors in the city of Bridgeport for an upcoming primary again. Connecticut Energy Marketers Association head Chris Herb stopped by to talk about a possible move to resurrect a ban on the sale of gasoline-powered cars starting in 2035. And Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and editor Dan Haar stopped by for his weekly update. So I'm looking at the calendar. It's a calendar right in front of me here in our studios. And today it says Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. Okay. So in less than 1 week, this coming Tuesday, the 23rd, so let's see, today is, well, hold on, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, oh, Tuesday. Yeah. Tuesday the 23rd is when we are now going to have Gomes-Ganem round three. Round three. Just like, you know, Ali Frazier. One, two, and three. Those were all in big arenas at the Garden, whatever. But we're having Joe Ganem and John Gomes facing off for the third time, the second round in a Democratic mayoral primary, and after that, who knows, maybe a fourth time in a general election. Why do I start with this? Well, you heard it this morning on the program with Melissa, and you just heard it from Chris Williams over there handling the news. Election, now how is this possible? Can somebody please explain this to me? Or as Ricky used to say, explain to me, Lucy. Election monitors, I'm reading right from our news source here and also from a story by our buddy Brian Lockhart, Hearst Connecticut Media, and other folks. Election monitors are still needed for the repeat of the Bridgeport Democratic primary for mayor that's being held next week. Next week! Next week! How long have we known about this? When did the, and again, forgive me, I should have looked up the exact date. When did the judge set the alternate primary date of next Tuesday, and then following that, barring everybody quitting after the primary, or at least leaving one person standing, the second day for a general election? We've known this for, what, 2 or 3 months? Haven't we? I don't know the exact number of days. Forgive me if I sit here at 17 past 2 on a nice-looking Wednesday, a little frigid out there. But are we serious here? That's my point. Is this a joke? Now, I'm not talking about the race between Mr. Gomes and Mr. Ganem. Lord knows we've talked about that enough, and we'll continue to talk about it. But are we serious? We, meaning the state of Connecticut, the voters of the state, the people who run the state, is there, and I'm asking this honestly here, this is not for effect. This is not rhetorical in any way to start the program today. Is there any level of seriousness here as to wanting to get the Bridgeport situation right? I don't live in Bridgeport. I don't care who wins. I really don't. I know you people do, and you should, whether you're in the Gomes camp or the Ganem camp or some other camp. That's not the issue that I'm talking about right now. I'm talking about, do we want to get this right? Tara Chozet, Stephanie Thomas's communications director, Stephanie Thomas, the core secretary of the state, telling Hearst Media, quote, "We've received just under 24 responses from interested parties." She said that on Tuesday. She clarified, though, that only about half of those applicants were available to be in person in Bridgeport, which is preferred. Now, how often in a given year or a given time frame, and we talk about it here on the program, and I understand that election law is a very specific study of legalese. I understand that election law is complicated. I know guys and gals who have specialized in this and who have consulted people on this, being involved in a couple of campaigns as I was over 10 years ago. So this is not law school 101 stuff. But having said that, in a state with the UConn Law School and the Yale University Law School and the Quinnipiac Law School, and a state that undoubtedly has, I don't know, how many lawyers does Connecticut have? Probably a few thousand who've passed the bar. And I understand this is election law. This is not contract law 101. You know, this is not wills, doing wills or powers of attorney. I get that. I understand that. But how is it? Please explain to me. I don't get it. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. I don't get it. How is it that we knew about this 2 or 3 months back? It's got to be a couple, 3 months. Again, forgive me for not having the exact date when the judge in the case set these redos for both the primary coming up this coming Tuesday and a likely round 4 second general election coming up in a few weeks. But how was this not done, if not immediately, but sooner? And how is it that in a state which, again, has all these, and I'm sure they're great law schools, I know people, I have friends and acquaintances of mine who have gone to Yale Law and have gone to Quinnipiac Law School and have gone to the UConn Law School. How is it that we always see Yale Law students and Quinnipiac Law students and UConn Law students, to their credit, step up in areas helping people, whether it's immigrants or migrants or people getting kicked out of their homes and doing stuff for the right reason, yet we're still scraping here? For lawyers? Lawyers. Monitors. We can't find any. We can't find enough. In a state where Governor Lamont and every other previous governor has said, and every future governor has said, well, hey, we have the best and the brightest here in the state. Well, do we? I don't know. Again, from our other news source here, election monitors still needed for the repeat of the Bridgeport Democratic mayoral primary being held next week. Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas is seeking people with law backgrounds, I would hope, to volunteer to be in Bridgeport to monitor activity at the polls. A judge has ordered a repeat of the primary won by Joe Ganim over John Gomes in September, yada, yada, yada. Anybody interested is asked to contact the Secretary of the State's office. I would hope for. So please help me out here. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. I don't, there's something missing here. There's a disconnect here. Is there not? Am I the idiot here? Go ahead. Have a field day with that question. We debate that every Monday through Friday from 2 to 6 here. Am I the dope? Am I the student here? Am I the gavon? Thinking that, geez, in the state of Connecticut, with people who are wonderful in so many fields, from manufacturing to the law to medicine to aerospace, that we wouldn't have to. Essentially, isn't this what's happening now? Are we not begging here? Please, if you're a lawyer and you understand election law, please help Bridgeport. How sad is this? How sad is this? Now, you may be sit there and you may be sitting listening to me now. And please, if this is your contention that I don't know how hard this is to find people who understand election law, okay. But we got to do better here. We have to do better. Or maybe, is this the problem? Could the problem be that there are people out there who would want to help? And no, honestly, are there people out there who might want to help, but then they give it a second thought and just say, oh, yeah, but I please, I don't want the Bridgeport thing. No, I'll be a poll monitor Anywhere and every... No, no, you know this is in Bridgeport, don't you? No, no, no. I'll do it in New Haven. I'll do it in Hartford, Middletown, Meriden, Waterbury. Not in Bridgeport. How sad is this? Again, a quote from Tara Chauzet. I think I've spoken to her once. She's the spokesperson in the Secretary of the State's office. We've received just under 24 responses. So you mean to tell me, in the entire state of Connecticut, with 3.2 or 3.3 million people, whatever, in the entire state of Connecticut, only less than 24 people have checked in here? I don't get this. What is the problem here? Maybe it is. Do you think I'm right? Maybe it is that they just don't want to get mixed up in Bridgeport. Could be. That's a sad thing if it is. You know, maybe they're saying, yeah, but then they're going to pull me in court and they're going to ask me to, you know, what did you see, sir or ma'am? In your opinion, was that ballot cast legally? Maybe people are scared away. Maybe they are. I don't know. Before we head to the break here, in the land where we can't find monitors for elections, I'll bet you, by the way, before we go to the phones, Albert, hang on, you could probably get more election monitors from the Yale Law School or Quinnipiac Law or UConn Law to go to, like, Guatemala or go to El Salvador or Ecuador to watch an election there instead of getting it for Bridgeport. Albert and Ansonia. Albert, hi, you're on WICC. What's up?
How you doing, Paul?
Good, Albert. What's up?
So I actually do have a question because I'm not really too familiar with it. Like, I don't really follow politics. I'm part of the younger generation.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't understand is if there's found to be an election fraud anywhere, whether it's a mayor, governor, anything, why doesn't that automatically disqualify the candidate and go further into an investigation, especially if they're incumbent? Because if that's what's going on, like if there's that kind of corruption going on in the background, there's got to be something more to it than just, you know, voters fraud, right?
Yeah, Albert, what is going on? Now, those are good questions. Now, for example, in the Bridgeport situation, yes, there is an investigation going on multiple levels because of the alleged funny business with the absentee ballot. So on a local level, the State Elections Enforcement Commission, they are well into the investigation, not only of this cycle in Bridgeport, but back to 2019. So you have that. There are rumors, you do have the Bridgeport police investigating this. Some people say the state police and the feds are investigating this, too. And to your other question, if a candidate is found to have directly participated in this, and you can connect that candidate to the funny business, yeah, they're in serious legal trouble. The situation here, however, in Bridgeport, with Wanda Jeter Pataki, who is now taking a leave of office from her Gannon administration post, the mayor says what she did was not authorized by him.
Okay, all right, yeah. See, I was unclear on the situation.
Yeah. Albert, thank you, my friend. Appreciate the call. All right, folks, what do you think? Here we are in the state of Connecticut. We've got the UConn Law School. We've got the Quinnipiac Law School. We've got the Yale Law School, right? You probably have friends or family members. Oh, yeah, my cousin went to UConn Law. My brother-in-law's sister went to Quinnipiac Law, whatever. I personally know people that have been to all three. But we can't find enough monitors for Bridgeport's elections. How's that work out? I'm telling you, there are people at all those law schools that would rather go to Central America and be shot at, probably, than be a monitor in Bridgeport. All right, 2 hours down, two to go. We'll get back to open phones momentarily. And when we do that, gosh darn it, you know, the phone number, it won't change, I promise. 203-333-9422-333-WIC. See, what also isn't changing is the leaders up in Hartford Oh, no matter how many times people of the state say, no, we don't want this, like in tolls. No, we don't want this, like in TCI. No, we don't want this, like a mandate to stop the sale of gasoline-powered vehicles. They never stop. Chris Herb is with us, who has kept us abreast of this stuff for the past few years. Chris heads SEMA, the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. Chris, good to have you on. Happy New Year. How are you?
Well, I'm not sure it's so good to have me on. It's bad news.
Well, it's always good, Chris, to have you on because because you alert the people, Chris. You stir up the people, which is what we need. All right, now, so what's going on? Now, you and I both knew, Chris, that when this stuff goes away, it never really goes away. It's kind of reconstituted here. So tell my listeners what may happen, what will likely happen, what might happen. What's the deal here?
Sure. So what ended up happening in November when the Regulations Review Committee had the regulations to ban the sale of gasoline-powered cars and diesel trucks pulled, I think it lulled us into or lulled the public into a false sense of security that this was not going to happen. And unfortunately, we ate our turkey dinners at Thanksgiving. We went to Christmas and everyone was sort of asleep. We have continued to talk to legislators who thought that, and it's now confirmed that there was pressure to continue to have this come back as a vote before the legislature to actually do it. So we are now in a position that before the regular legislative session is going to start, it appears that the leaders are going to call a special legislative session to vote on mandating the sale of electric vehicles for all of Connecticut. And that is very concerning because you're basically removing any kind of public input into this process.
So, Chris, you and I have heard the buzz from the other side over the past few months being, Connecticut had to do this. We had no choice because back in, 20 years ago in 2004, under Governor John Rowland, we agreed to do what California is doing there. I get all that. I understand that. But just because another state is doing something, it doesn't mean that at this point, or back then rather, we could have possibly thought that there would be such a move to alter the livelihood of thousands of people, not just their commercial livelihood, but just their everyday existence in this state.
Yeah, a generation ago, there was no way for the legislature, for policymakers to understand that what these regulations could mean is banning the sale of gasoline-powered cars. There's no way they could have contemplated that. So now we're in a position 20 years later where the legislature could thoughtfully reconsider this policy. And it's not like we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. We can follow the EPA standards, which are much more reasonable. It moves more slowly. It allows markets to evolve. It allows people to adapt. But instead, what we're being told is that they want to force something that legislature in 2004 could have never have conceived of. I could not believe that anyone at that time would think that, they would have thought that there were flying cars, not just electric cars at that time. So let's do something that makes sense for the people of Connecticut, not for what made sense a long time ago or what makes sense maybe for California today.
Chris Herb, a few months ago, when this was at least put back out to stable for a little bit, mostly because a couple of Democrats, Kathy Austin from the eastern part of the state and Joan Hartley from Waterbury, said, hey, they have misgivings. Kathy Austin saying because of the agriculture folks out where she is, and Joan Hartley saying because of the low and low middle income people in and about the Waterbury area. We had heard, well, maybe this is a signal now to redo this, call for a vote, and put, stop gaps here, Chris, or benchmarks in which other states are doing as far as seeing progress in the build-out of their electric grids and charging stations with definite plans, written plans with T's crossed and I's dotted. Any indication, what are you hearing that might come up in the special session? Would there be anything like that or not, or do we not know?
So the simple answer is we don't know. Nothing has been shared. We've met with legislative leaders. They have not provided us with any language. So I can't tell you definitively what's going to be considered. And that's a concern. But what we're advocating for, and the reason why, you know, having this opportunity to talk to your listeners directly about what's happening, is it's about process. It's not about politics. This may be an up or down vote. Yes, we're gonna ban gasoline powered cars, or no, we're not. But there should be a public hearing process, and that happens only a week after what I'm hearing is the scheduled vote for a special session. There is no reason to do this in a special session rather than a regular session, except to exclude the public. So our question and what we're trying to get out there is that people should contact legislators to say, at least give me a voice, allow me to participate in voicing that. So if there are benchmarks, if there are other things in that bill, let the hear from the public. Make the best decision based on the voters of Connecticut, not on what you think they want, because we have that opportunity, and it's only the difference of a week.
Chris, the other night I was on the way home, and I stopped at a local supermarket near where I live, and I'm a car guy, and I saw this really slick, new-looking EV that was parked next to me. And the guy was loading stuff in the back, and we struck up a conversation, and I said, how do you like it? And he said, it's great. The acceleration is ungodly. It handles great. A couple of quirks here and there, but I like the car. And the point is, Chris, he liked that car. That was good for his lifestyle, he said. He said he gets about 300 miles a charge, and for him, where he goes, his type of driving, he made that decision as a consumer. And Chris, you and I see numerous EVs on the road. The change is already happening, and my point is, and I think you know where I'm going here, why is this even necessary? Why these mandates when there are more EVs, Chris, on the road every single day, but yet there are some people who feel that because of their locale or the weather here that, no, they would like to stick, at least for the time being, and maybe in the next 10, 15 years, with a gasoline-powered vehicle. It just frosts me off, Chris Herb, when you have bureaucrats saying, well, no, you're not adapting fast enough, so we're going to force you to do this. It's mind-boggling.
Well, I personally, I am offended when others who think they know better than me, so they want to tell me how to live my life and how to do things. That's personally offending. And I would say this, that the administration has repeatedly said that the market's moving in that direction. Well, if it is, then allow consumers to continue to have choice. This is still America. Let us pick what's in our best interest. Let us fit our lifestyles, our economics. But that's not what they want to do. They want to tell us what's better for us and limit and remove our options. And I think that that's why we need to have these public hearings. We have to do this in a regular session, not in a special session where no one can express their feelings about that.
Chris Herb, thank you. Appreciate it. Folks, Chris Herb heads the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. Chris, your contact has my contact stuff, so anything happens over the next few days, be sure and let me know, okay?
Paul, have all your people call their legislators as soon as possible to oppose this.
Yes, and I've mentioned that numerous times. Chris, thank you. Appreciate it.
Have a good night.
All right, there you go, folks. Chris Herb, but again... even if you drive an EV, and I go out of my way to say this, this is not EV versus gasoline vehicle. It's not. I think EV technology is amazing. If you read how this stuff works and the braking and the acceleration and single motor versus dual motor and the regenerative braking, and it's amazing stuff. Give people a choice. And if you're going to put this up there and it's going to be, and remember, now under the old bill, that phase out, even though the end point of the phase out was going to be 2035, which is 11 more model years, it's supposed to start in 2027. Look at that. Ding, ding, ding. Just three more model years. Now, how this would happen, I don't know. Does the state say to traditional car dealers, hey, we're going to limit you on how many gasoline-powered vehicles you could sell? And, of course, high demand, low supply. What does that do? Ding, ding, ding. Economics 101, the price goes up. But if they're going to do this, at least have a public hearing on this. At least have a public hearing. Because if they don't have a public hearing, that's cowardly. See, I get it. You don't want to be yelled at as a legislator. I understand that. But you know what? It's maybe what you signed up for. So, again, and we'll keep you up to date on this. Again, I checked with a couple of more of my sources early today. I said, have you heard anything about the dates for the special session? Not yet. So, now look, maybe you're in favor of this. God bless you. But if you're not, within the next day or so, find out if you don't. Now, a lot of you folks in this audience, you know who your state Senate member is or your state House member is. Call their office or fire off an email. Be courteous. Be beyond courteous. Be like Shakespearean Elizabethan courteous. Oh, it's come to my attention that you forthwith might be undertaking an issue. Be courteous. Don't yell. Don't scream. Don't use epithets. Just say whether you support or you don't. And if you are upset that this might happen without public input, just tell them that. That's all. And also tell them, I know it's an election year. And I am watching you carefully. That's not trying to be ominous here. But again, remember, maybe not so much in the state Senate districts. Those are big districts. House districts, though, you know, couple of hundred votes either way. I'm just saying, if this bothers you, if it doesn't, write them and call them and say, good on you. We need more electric vehicles. My whole point is, don't force it. Don't force it. Let people are the number of EVs sold in this country rises every week, every day. There's numbers to prove that. Don't force something on people. And by the way, you know, Joan Hartley, particularly in Waterbury, had talked about, and I know there were some other legislators who said, hey, how does this affect low and middle income people? Well, I don't know. You tell me. And I have since this thing has come up, I've said over and over and over again, where's the detailed plan? I mean, I want details. Where is the detailed plan for the build out and build up of the charging grid? Where is it? You know, when they did have some input on this a few months ago, I recall one of the engineers from Eversource saying, with all these extra EVs, like, we don't have this power. Like, we can't generate enough power here. Again, folks, it's not pro-EV or anti-EV for me or guests. I don't care what you drive, frankly. It's none of my business. But what I am pro for is common sense. The fourth and final hour. Let me tell you something. When we get to the 5 o'clock hour, all bets are off. I had my banana late in the show. I had the 4 o'clock banana on the 5 o'clock news break there. So I'm good for the next, 46 minutes and 51 seconds. I'm all fibered up. I'm all glucosed up. For Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media joins us now with his weekly update. Good afternoon, Mr. Haar.
Good afternoon. How's it looking?
It's looking okay, Dan. It looks any day I get out of bed and all my limbs are functioning, I can see and I can hear, it's always looking good. Dan, at my age, I don't want much. What can I tell you?
You're a young guy. You're a young guy.
Yeah, I try. Well, I'm not that young, but, you know, 62, I feel like I'm about 40. But beyond that, Dan, there's a lot of news going on. What are we looking at here? Let's first talk about state revenues here. What do the balance sheets say, Dan?
Yeah, the report yesterday, this is three times a year Connecticut readjusts the likely revenues for the next year or two years, really. And it comes in January, April, and November. April is the more important one because that's the one that is used to set the budget. But all of them are important. And this one, we were kind of braced for a decline in income tax withholding. That is the tax that we all pay. Think of the big taxes as three buckets, right? One is the what's called estimates and finals, but it's really capital gains and profits of LLCs. That's the people that have the most money. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason that we're doing so well, because they've been making a whole lot of money. The other is the withholding that we pay, and the other is the sales tax. and the withholding is actually up, the money that we're paying. So that's a really good sign, both for the fiscal health of the state and for the economy. It's not up by much. I mean, it's a rounding error. It's up by, I think Keith Faniff reported in the Mirror, 1/40 of 1% of the state budget. It's a tiny amount. Right? But the point is, it isn't down. New York, New Jersey, some of the other states are seeing declines, and we're holding steady. So that's a good thing. However, don't get too excited. There is not, as we've discussed on this show, going to be a broad-based tax decrease. That's not going to happen. And Lamont is really holding the middle.
Now, as to the Connecticut primary ballots, Dan Haar, I guess the names have to be, or the ballot has to be set in a few days. But we're hearing some interesting rumblings, and I know you folks at Hearst reported a couple of months back, and a bunch of other people, Stephanie Thomas said, hey, I'm going to wait for the courts about Trump. But then we saw reports over the weekend, I think the Republican American had it, Dan, and well, maybe I'm checking about the 14th Amendment and January 6th and all this. So what do you make of all this as we head to the kind of date where the ballot has to be set?
Well, Friday is the day it's going to be set. At least Friday is the day they're going to announce it.
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit more time before it has to be legally set. But Friday, the Secretary of the State's office is announcing. I thought the big suspense was to see whether Dean Phillips qualified in Connecticut for a Democratic primary or Marianne Williamson. But as far as Trump on the ballot, listen, if you dislike Trump a whole lot, you want him on the ballot. Because the more the bad things that happen to him, the better he does. And I think both his detractors and his supporters are kind of frustrated and maybe disgusted with this whole thing about is he or is he not on the ballot. And I agree with both sides who say that's not the best way in the world to defeat Donald Trump. And nobody wants to see him defeated more than I do, as you know, just based on his character, not on his policies. I don't see Connecticut taking the lead on a 14th Amendment disqualification, but I guess we'll find out Friday.
And Dan, one thing before we move on to a couple of other things. I guess the Secretary of the State's office is still looking for election monitors, Dan Haar, in Bridgeport. I think, why don't you, could do that, Dan, you know, hole up at a precinct somewhere and then write a story on it. Do you have any knowledge or any base of election law in your vast years of experience or not?
Election law. Let me think. Election law. No, I specialize in motor vehicle law. I'm better at motor vehicle law. I want to talk about the cameras and whether that's an invasion of privacy.
Go ahead.
But all kidding aside, the Secretary of the State, Secretary Thomas, said that it's not so easy to find people. And she's right, because if you look at the qualifications that a person has to have to oversee an election in a place like Bridgeport, the qualifications are high. The money is not high. The risk of failure is high. And, you know, there aren't a lot of people lining up. People were upset at her for putting in an election monitor secretly. And she made the point that I wanted to do it secretly, she said. that ruffled some FOI feathers. But I think she's in good stead, saying, look, let's just quietly go about this and get it done. I don't see anything changing in Bridgeport, though.
What about the cameras? I guess we're looking at regional help for cameras. Did I read something about that or not? What's the latest with that?
The latest is that the legislation is done and there's nothing more for the General Assembly to do. And it's a matter of the Department of Transportation approving each individual plan from each individual city. And you just have to be careful, especially if you're a city with a significant minority population, where they're going to be scrutinizing where you put and how you use cameras. What annoys me is these red light things, because Connecticut should basically have no red lights after midnight.
Well, right? I know what you mean. I agree with that. Okay.
There's not one single intersection in the entire state of Connecticut that needs to be activated other than a flashing red and yellow light after midnight. It's not a single one.
Except the one that I got caught at a few years ago in Wallingford at 2 in the morning, but that's another story, with one of Wallingford's finest, Dan, parking his car behind a row of hedges that's no longer there. But let's finish up with two things. We're hearing rumblings, Dan Haar, about a special session, as a lot of folks in Hartford are determined to do this phase out of the sale of gasoline-powered vehicles again. Dan, do you think they'll go about this differently? Or were there going to be benchmarks here? Will there be checkpoints here or not?
Well, sure, they're going to be benchmarks and checkpoints. But the operative issue right now is that this governor doesn't seem willing or able to do what's necessary to get legislators in his own party in line with a significant policy initiative. And unless he does, they're not going to have a special session because they're not going to have the votes. And he's got to be bringing people into his office and either squeezing them or offering them something, one of those two things or both. And I do not have the impression that he's doing that. He's just sort of leaving it to the legislative leaders. Well, we know Speaker Ritter is four square in favor of this. I think the Senate President Looney is a little bit less enthusiastic about it, but Speaker Ritter is enthusiastic about it. So let him go get the votes. Right? The irony is that the votes are already in the Senate solidly because there's a 24-12 Democratic majority. But the bottom line is this has become a political question right now. Operatively, if Connecticut passes it, there will be no problem. Everybody needs to stop wringing their hands and say, oh my God, we can't plug in this many cars. We can't plug in. This is 12 years away. And if it doesn't happen by 2035, it'll happen by 2040. Nobody should get too excited. Oh, I'm not going to be able to.
Well, see, Dan, I agree with that. And I'm one of those people banging my grandmother's pots and pans on this. So I'm all for this if I see a bill or a law pass that says, okay, but if we're not here by X amount of date, A, B, and C will happen. So in principle, I have no problem with this. But let's be realistic about this. As far as you and I have talked about this, power generation, boosting the grid. I think that's really what people want to see, Dan.
Well, they're going to need to see it if this passes. But the problem with power generation is power generation using what for fuel? Because we're both politically and physically, we've run out of the ability to power up a whole lot more natural gas plants. And so where are we going to get what is the fuel? And obviously battery power is grid-scale battery power, which is coming and is here on a smaller scale, but grid-scale battery power is where it's at because when the sun don't shine, you still need to have some power based on all those solar arrays that are on your roof, no doubt, but not mine because I have too many trees.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
A liberal.
Wow.
Liberals, you know, we have too many trees. So
we'd
love to have solar, but we've got too many trees.
And finally, Mr. Liberal, who loves trees, interesting. Our attorney general, Mr. Tong, says, hey, we would need to change the state constitution, right, if we want to do this ranked choice voting on certain levels of elections.
Not a very controversial or difficult opinion for him to have come to. It would have been absolutely crazy if he said the legislature on its own can change the way we count votes, but was not allowed to change early voting, for example, or no excuse absentee voting, which are less about the core of counting votes and more about how votes are submitted. So this is core to the state's constitution, and he was 100% right. And I don't expect the legislature to pass it, certainly not in an election year. And by the way, just to go back to the other issue, I don't see the reason that they want to have a special session on electric vehicles is because they can get it out of the way in January and people forget about it. But if they vote for it in May, that's too close to the elections and we will lose too many Democrats. That's why they want to have it.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Haar. Yeah. And as far as ranked choice voting, Dan, it's interesting. I've had a bunch of guests on here. I'd like to see it tried, but I don't want a system, Dan, where it's only used in municipalities, but the people in the state house and state senate said, well, we're never going to allow that here. I know other states do it statewide, so am I opposed to it? No, but I would like to see if it's good for one, it's good for the other, but maybe I'm just dreaming.
Where it would be really good, it would be in Congress, like you see in Maine.
Yes.
And you get more centrist. The whole point of it is to get less extremist candidates. So that you, and it has to, doesn't have to, but it can be done in conjunction with open primaries, right? So if you were to have ranked choice voting, open primaries, the only other third leg in the triad would be institutionalized tea and crumpets at 4 p.m. at Harrods. And I think we'd be all set.
Boy, you're getting a lot of oxygen from those trees you love. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, have a wonderful rest of the week, wonderful weekend, and we'll chat next week. Thanks.
Have a great week.
All right, there you go. Dan Haar, ladies and gentlemen, he likes trees. There you go. See, conservatives like trees, too. Yes, there you go.